always puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
And it's time for Abandoned Manitoba with Gordon Goldsboro from the Manitoba Historical Society. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Bruce.
So, remind us of the clue from last week.
Well, I said that longtime listeners know of my fixation with grain elevators. Mm-hmm. Recently, I learned that an old elevator in Manitoba has been closed, and that's often the first step towards demolition. What's noteworthy about this elevator is that it is just as fascinating to geotechnical engineers as it is to historians. We're talking about a transfer elevator in the North Transcona area of Winnipeg, although technically it's within the rural municipality of Springfield.
All right, so there's a few things to talk about here. First, what is a geotechnical engineer?
That's an engineer who specializes in the physical properties of rock and soil that underlies a site. Such engineers design the foundation for proposed new structures. They deal with erosion problems. They advise on repairs to structures that have shifted due to earth movement. And that's particularly relevant to our story today.
And you also mentioned a transfer elevator. What's a transfer elevator?
Well, most of the elevators that once stood in Manitoba, over 700 of them, were country elevators. What that meant was that they stood in rural areas and were the initial receptacles of grain delivered by farmers. Country elevators would load the grain into railway boxcars, and in some cases, those boxcars would be delivered to transfer elevators at key spots in the railway network. The function of a transfer elevator was to receive the grain that had been officially inspected and weighed at a country elevator, and then possibly either clean it or treat it, and then store the grain before shipping it on to terminal elevators at places like Thunder Bay and Vancouver.
So just literally transferring from one place to another.
Exactly, and sometimes serving as sort of a storage place along the way.
So what transfer elevator are we talking about today?
It's a huge concrete elevator that was built in 1912, 109 years ago, by the Canadian Pacific Railway as part of its North Transcona yards. Now, we've spoken about these yards before, back in 2017, when we discussed an abandoned railway bridge in the middle of the Red River. That bridge, part of the Bergen Cutoff railway line, and the North Transcona yards were all part of a system built by the CPR between 1912 and 1914 to shunt railway traffic around the city of Winnipeg, rather than having it go right through the center. Mm-hmm. It was built at a cost of $4 million, which, you know, is not an inconsiderable sum even today, but back then, that's a vast amount of money.
Right.
Then the North Transcona Yard was said to be the largest in all of North America. It featured 105 miles of track with room for over 12,000 railway cars and a 106-foot turntable for turning the steam locomotives around. And that was considered to be the largest in North America. The transfer elevator that was built on the north side of that yard had a capacity for, wait for it, 1 million bushels of grain.
Wow.
Now, to put in perspective the enormity of that elevator, the average country elevator at that time was 31,000 bushels, or about 3% the size of the one in North Transcona.
That's massive. Mm-hmm. So you said that elevator was interesting to geotechnical engineers. Why?
Well, because of what happened to it on the 18th of October, 1913, about a year after it was built. Now, today, when a large building is constructed, the first step is to drive piles down to bedrock as a firm foundation for the building. But that huge transfer elevator had no such piles. It was merely sitting on the surface of the ground. So over a period of 12 hours in 1913, the elevator began to tip until it was off center by almost 30 degrees from vertical. You know, its western edge had sunk 43 feet into the ground. The only reason that it did not topple over completely is that its sinking was stopped by a layer of glacial till and bedrock deep in the ground. Clearly, the foundation was inadequately designed for the weight of the grain. Probably what happened was that grain was poured into bins on one side of the elevator, without a compensating weight put in bins on the opposite side. In other words, it was unbalanced and it tipped over.
In a 12-hour period.
Mm-hmm.
That's fascinating. So what did they do?
Well, while the elevator was moving, there was nothing to be done. Just stand there and watch it.
Wow.
When it stopped, the first task was to remove the grain inside, you know, so that they could get a little bit of the weight out so they could try to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
So workers bored holes into the concrete walls of the bins so they could pump out the grain. A company from Montreal was hired to advise the railway what could be done. Well, jump forward to the present. A geotechnical engineer here in Winnipeg, Ken Skaptfeld, has studied their work carefully, and he shared photos and diagrams with me of the work they did.
Right.
The first thing they did is they dug underneath the tilted bins, and they installed jacks with huge, absolutely enormous wooden beams on the west side of the elevator. By lifting the jacks slowly and moving the beams ahead as they went, the elevator was slowly tilted back until it was vertical again. At that point, they installed concrete piles under the elevator to prevent a recurrence. So by the mid-October 1914, the elevator was back in operation. Incidentally, the holes in the bins, the ones they used to empty it during the disaster, are still clearly visible on the west side. They refilled them with concrete, but you can still very easily see the round holes where they bored into them.
Huh.
So today, geotechnical engineers use the case to illustrate the importance of having a properly designed foundation for a building.
And so what happened to that elevator?
Well, it would continue to be owned by the Canadian Pacific Railway, but they leased it to grain companies through the years. Judging from the ghost signs that are conspicuous on the sides of the elevator, one of those firms was Wiley Lowe and Company, because there's a big sign right on it says Wiley Lowe, if you look carefully.
Mm-hmm.
From the 1940s to at least 1965, the elevator was leased to something called the Eastern Terminal Elevator Company. That was a subsidiary of the prominent Winnipeg grain firm of James Richardson and Sons. And they used that elevator during the Second World War to store surplus grain that could not be shipped overseas because of war. The elevator was vacant in the late 1960s until being purchased in 1970 by the grain company Parrish and Heimbecker.
What did they do with it?
Well, Parrish and Heimbecker installed a new driveway. They added a new scale and a leg. They basically modernized it to turn the facility into a country elevator where farmers could deliver their grain. Now, I had an opportunity a few years ago to speak with Bill Parrish Sr. He spearheaded the project on behalf of the company, and I think he should be recognized as a real pioneer in the operation of concrete grain elevators in Manitoba. Today, they're very common, and in fact, I would say they're the norm in the industry. The first such elevator was built in Swan River in 1961, a little bit before Parrish and Heimbecker began operating the one in North Transcona. But that one in Swan River, it had a capacity of only 146 bushels, merely 15% of the one in North Transcona. So in other words, that elevator in North Transcona is still massive, even by modern standards.
Right. So did they stop using it?
Indeed. I don't know for sure, but I think they stopped using it perhaps in the last few months for a variety of reasons. One, I think, is that Parrish and Heimbecker have recently built new concrete elevators in rural Manitoba, closer to farmers. So the need for one in Winnipeg may not have been so great. The North Transcona elevator was limited in the space that it had for railway cars. And that would be a problem, especially when you have lots of grain to transfer to the railway. It had limited dust control. So the indoor air quality, well, sometimes it wasn't so great working for the people working there. And that's something to which I can personally attest. I toured the elevator about 4 years ago, and I coughed for a couple of days afterwards because of all the dust that I took in.
Wow.
Finally, you know, I think it's pretty obvious that the elevator is old and it would need significant repairs to make it fully operable. When I visited, I noticed, for example, on a wall, there was a map of the elevator that showed several of its bins were no longer operable. In other words, they were permanently closed, either because of persistent water flooding or they had significant mechanical or structural problems.
And what is its present status?
Well, I was there a few weeks ago, and I noticed that the elevator's office, which was a separate building that stood near the entrance to the facility, has been removed. All there is left is just its foundation.
Right.
And the government license that was issued to operate the elevator was withdrawn 3 weeks ago. And so I would take all of that as a sign the elevator's days are numbered. But, you know, but given the amount of reinforced concrete that's involved, I would imagine that the demolition job will be a substantial one. So I definitely want to be there to see it when it comes down.
Yeah, as would I. I mean, 109 years old. It sounds like it was kind of ahead of its time.
Absolutely. I think it really is a significant achievement, not only just to build it in the first place and turn it upright, but also to reinforce its foundation so that it never happened again.
Excellent. Well, thank you for that one, Gordon.
You're welcome.
What's up for next week?
Well, in past episodes of Abandoned Manitoba, I have talked about some of the things my wife and I found during our walks around Winnipeg during the pandemic. Well, next week, our topic will be commercial buildings that we found very often in some of the city's older residential neighborhoods.
Interesting. Okay, we'll look forward to that one. Thank you once again, Gordon, for joining us this morning.
Talk next week. Bye-bye for now.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons.